to episode 42 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Barzeski in Erie, Pennsylvania. Joining me, as always, Jeff Smith in Washington. Hello.
Hello.
And joining us this week, Alan Olson, responsible for our Throwing Darts column. Hello, Alan.
Hello.
And where are you currently located?
Currently located in Zimmerman, Minnesota.
Minnesota. Not sure where Paul Azinger is currently located, but in 2 years, he'll be located in the captain's cart at the 2008 Ryder Cup. Paul Azinger speculated to be the Ryder Cup captain the next time the Americans lose to the Europeans. On Monday, it was made official. He will be the Ryder
Cup
captain. He's the next loser. To be opposing Nick Faldo. Your thoughts, Jeff?
Well, obviously, you know, he steps in and makes a first big change that I think is a really positive one, the scoring system.
We'll talk about that next, yeah.
Yeah, going to be a little different. So, yeah, that's a positive thing for me. He's a good choice. He had a great record in the Ryder Cup, and he's a pretty fiery captain, so I think he's going
to
do good.
He's won a PGA championship. The PGA runs, of course, the Ryder Cup, and they like to usually use PGA champions where possible, so a good thing there. Alan, your thoughts?
Oh, I think it's a great choice, and I like the fact he's going to have 4 wild card picks this time.
That's right. One of the things that Azinger did was shake up the qualifying system. Alan alluded to the 4 captain's picks that Azinger will be given. 8 people will qualify on points, 4 captain's picks for Paul Azinger, and he doesn't need to make those captain's picks until the week before the Ryder Cup, so he can really push it out. You know, we have our captain's picks this year were done the day after the PGA Championship, and it was another month or 5 weeks until the Ryder Cup came around. Azinger has until the week of the Ryder Cup, practically, to make the selection, so should be interesting. He should get some hot players in there. Also, changing up, Jeff, some of the other things. Tell us about those.
Yeah, well, it's going to be based now on the money list instead of world golf rankings, which is a really good way of getting hot players in there, guys who are playing well that year, and that's going to really benefit the American team. Whether or not that's going to push us over the edge next time is up for conjecture.
And Alan, what do you think? You think this will help or won't make any difference?
I think it absolutely will help by only having the majors count for most everything. I think that's a lot better than having some of these other tournaments where the field's maybe a little weaker, counting too much.
Right. It's lended itself to getting a lot of people who are happy to finish 8th in a PGA Tour event instead of, you know, going for the win and playing well in the big tournaments, the majors. So I think that'll help. Of course, the PGA has its hands full. 2 years of Paul Azinger mouthing off should be an interesting thing to deal with. Not really known to hold back, so it should be interesting to see what he has to say, especially going against Nick Faldo, who we spent much time in the booth with the past 2 years at ABC. That's the big story this week. Of course, last week we talked about Tiger Woods missing the Tour Championship. That certainly caught the notice of Tom Pernice, Vijay Singh's buddy. He really went off on Tiger. He said, you know, I think it's a disgrace. It's a slap in the face to Coca-Cola and the Tour. He would not make the money he makes if it wasn't for the PGA Tour. At some point, there's a credibility factor as to what's inside you as a person. There's a responsibility and an obligation to the people who helped make you what you are, who you are. To that, I'd say, you know what? He's fulfilled his obligation to the PGA Tour. Tom Pernice wouldn't be making damn near the money he's making if it weren't for Tiger Woods. And this just goes way too far in criticizing Tiger Woods. You know, you and I complained because we felt he owed it to the fans, not to his fellow players of the PGA Tour.
Oh, no. This is a load of sniveling here. Now, obviously, last week we bagged on Tiger. We did the same to Phil Mickelson when he pulled out. I think he goes too far when he says it's a disgrace and a slap in the face to Coca-Cola. Now, that's kind of out of hand. There's no rule on the books that says Tiger Woods has to be there. He's going to lose his card. And until that happens, it's not a disgrace. It's not a slap in the face. It's just part of business.
Not saying it's not on the minds of other players. It's certainly being floated around. Jeff Ogilvy said a few other things, too. He said, if it wasn't for Tiger, we'd be playing for $2 million this week instead of $6.5 million. So I think Tom Pernice could add that into his perspective. But, you know, a valid point, and certainly a lot of things that some players are saying. Of course, Tom Pernice didn't stop at criticizing Tiger Woods. He also jumped on and lambasted PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Fincham in the FedEx Cup next year, saying, Tim has no right to say that. It's not Tim's decision to make. Tim works for us, meaning the players, and so on and so on. We'll link to this article, but, you know, basically, Tom Pernice, who apparently doesn't know when his putter contacts the ball, if we can remember, is just mouthing off at the Tour Championship. I don't know if he played. I don't know where he finished the week, but if he had played as well as he had run his mouth, he would have walked away with a win. Yeah. We'll link to that story. You can read it. I don't have much more to say about it. Jeff, Alan, do you have anything to say about the Fincham story. Someone who's also an angry individual, Hal Sutton, really mouthed off to about the state of the PGA Tour right now. He said, "I'm so disgusted with where everything's gone, I don't even want to play the game." And so he hasn't. Yeah, whatever. And so on. This is a guy who, you know, 2 years ago, captained one of the biggest losses in the biggest American loss in Ryder Cup history, only matched this year. But, you know, there's no captain that's going to make the difference. Okay, yeah, it's good to say that now. But you know what? Had he won, I'm pretty sure he would have been taking some of the credit. I don't know. It strikes me as, you know, you get another crotchety golfer who's pissed off about goodness knows what. We're consumed by the almighty dollar. We've forgotten we all play the game because we love it. Greatness doesn't worry about money. Greatness worries about being great. I don't see Tiger Woods going out there worrying about money. If he worried playing the Tour Championship.
Not a bit. And this is where I'm not really sure what Hal Sutton's trying to get at. I mean, is he mad because that players now are making a lot more money than when he was winning tournaments? I'm not sure what he's getting at there. The one thing that I did identify with down in that article is he said the greatest in the world learn to play the game on the golf course. People think you have to learn it on the range. Well, and I kind of think he's hitting something that's pretty important here. And I was thinking about our loss at the Ryder Cup this just recently, and I really think that's a problem with American golf right now, is that you have a lot of guys that are more concerned about, you know, swing mechanics and so on than getting out there and winning. And I do wonder if that contributes to the difficulty that we have had of late fielding a team that can win. I mean, obviously they're great golfers, they got good swings, but we need competitors out there.
Right, Lee Trevino, you know, a lot of the old school players, you know, we've talked about how the Champions Tour seems to have a lot of the old school players who can get the job done but may not have the picture perfect swing. Yeah. Those guys learned to play golf. They didn't learn to swing a golf club, and I think that's a big difference that we see today. We have a lot of people that know how to swing a golf club but not necessarily play golf to the level they need to play golf.
Yeah.
You know, to get something done when your swing isn't firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
And I think that's a valid point, but the money and stuff, I don't know. Strikes me as sour grapes and yet another old fogey whining about how things were better in his day.
Not really sure where he's going with all that.
Well, we'll be right back after this message from Titleist. Stay with us.
For a crisper long iron, grip up on it about an inch.
Be real aggressive through impact.
Keep it short and aggressive.
Maintain your balance.
Take one more club and swing it smooth.
Think happy thoughts.
For a soft draw, close your stance and make sure you release the club.
I'm going to line my feet to the right a little bit, hook the club face, then grip the club.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And one more tip, trust your tightest.
Oh, that's got to be it, guys. Come on, that's a perfect shot.
Welcome back on our forum topic this week. We had Club Swinger 21 start a forum topic about the most hated or the golfers that you dislike. His picks were Chad Campbell, Rory Sabatini, Stuart Sink. We had some pretty lively discussion there. I threw in that my most disliked or hated, if you want to call it that, is Stephen Ames.
That's going a bit too far, but we'll say dislike here.
Yeah, I'm not going to say hated. It's disliked. I mean, Stephen Ames seems to come across with a kind of a holier-than-thou attitude, and he feels like he's apparently better than anyone else.
Right.
From what I can tell, what about you guys? What's your take there?
I don't really think I think, like you said, hated is a little too strong. Ben Crane probably gets on my nerves just because he takes too long to hit. Sergio used to take way too long to hit. And I just really have never liked Rory Sabatini at all.
Yeah, Rory Sabatini gets a vote for me just for the way he treated not only, I don't care if he was playing with Ben Crane or whoever, I don't care how slow they were, you don't treat your fellow competitors that way. And, you know, he certainly got booed, and, you know, the people in the press tent, in the media room and stuff at the time certainly took him to task for the way he treated Ben Crane last year. So that right there earned him a spot in my, you know, most disliked list. Phil Mickelson is not on my list. I really just don't care about the guy. I think he's a goof, and that's that, but I don't actively dislike him.
Yeah, well, and there's plenty of evidence that these guys can redeem themselves. I was thinking about Paul Casey. Now, I don't think he's getting the bad press that he once was. I think he made his apology.
I think that bad press was overrated. I mean, I think you have
to. Well, it obviously was.
I think he said, "I properly hate them," and that's a little bit different over there, but he meant in the context of the Ryder Cup, and, you know, in that context, you kind of have to dislike. You kind of have to want. I mean, Tiger talks about wanting to step on the throat of guys he's playing against. It's the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that was a bit overrated.
And Sergio Garcia, you know, obviously, Alan, you mentioned he mended his ways. He's much quicker, and I think Ben Crane made some effort to go faster. The last time I saw him playing, though, it didn't appear that way.
I don't know. He's down to, like, 15 waggles instead of 30, so. That's a 50% improvement. I'm willing to give
credit. That is impressive.
Anyway, if you dislike some golfers, go ahead and pop in our show notes and check the link to the forum thread on this. It's called Most Hated, Golfers You Dislike. And again, Club Swinger 21 started that thread. We'll be right back after this ad from Titleist.
To hit the ball more solid off the tee, you need to swing at a pace you can't control and catch the ball right in the middle of the club face.
You want to hit it a little bit longer, try moving it up in your stance just a little.
You got to complete your backswing.
Try a little pause at the top.
Try a bigger shoulder tap.
Grip it more in the fingers and less in the palm.
If you want to hit it big, you got to swing big.
And the most important tip of all,
trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
That was a good shot, too.
And welcome back to the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. I couldn't keep that going. I won't even bother trying my Australian accent, but Adam Scott finally wins something, and it happens to be the Tour Championship, so he only beat 26 other guys. But he kind of walked away with this tournament. You know, he led by two or so after Saturday's play and ended up winning by five or something, I think. He was in kind of a race to beat Jim Furyk for the Vardon Trophy. Of course, Tiger Woods would have easily won that trophy had he played like one more round of golf or something. But Adam Scott didn't quite catch up to Jim Furyk there. Jim Furyk he shot a 66 on the final day, so that locked him out. But, you know, an interesting tournament, and finally Adam Scott winning something of, you know, importance. I mean, he hadn't really done that since his Players' Championship win 2 years ago.
Yeah, it was an impressive win. I mean, he held the lead third round. He knew what he had to do. The question came to him a couple of times, do you feel pressure? Well, he says, you know, I do feel a certain amount of pressure, not something he was stressing out about, but he knew what he had to get done. And the thing I noticed was, you know, not only did he play fairly steady, his bad shots came out well. You know, you might remember the 2-iron up to tap-in range.
On Saturday, yeah, he hit a horrible shot and kind of looked away. I was like, oh, that kind of runs up there to tap-in range for eagle to give him a two-shot lead, so... Yeah, you know, you got to be better to be lucky than good, they say, right, Alan?
Absolutely, yeah. It was great to see him win. What I was kind of surprised is the amount of money this guy pulled in for only winning one tournament.
Almost $5 million, only earning $1.17 million in this last tournament. So he came into the tournament with $3.8 million or so.
Yeah, so
didn't win. And this is what we talk about with American players not being groomed to win, but just being groomed to keep their tour cards, because... Again, 125 on the money list was $670,000. And I'm sorry, but if you can't get by on $670,000 a year, you have a gambling problem or you like hookers. I don't know.
Both.
John Daly. He had to try to get by on $191,000 this year, right? Is the cup half empty? It's a look at the Tour Championship and what happens when people don't come out. Is this portend to talk about next year and the FedEx Cup?
This applies. Now, I think this is a different time. The FedEx Cup is going to have to redefine itself, and I think there's enough of a commitment from players knowing that the season is going to be shorter. We think of guys like Tiger and Phil who are pulling out early. I think there's enough incentive for them to stick it out and see, you know, play there because it's going to be shorter anyway.
Alan?
Yeah, I think the shorter season is really going to help out and kind of keep people's interest in golf, because I think once football season happens, it's over.
Aaron Oberholzer summed it up by saying, hey, we're independent contractors. That's the best politically correct answer I can give you. It's always going to be up to the players to decide whether they want to play in a tournament or not. So we'll see. Hopefully Tiger and Phil will own up to or live up to what they said in basically getting the shorter schedule put into action, in that they would play more if the season was over earlier. And I always find it interesting to see how Phil always likes to say, yeah, I wish the top players would play against each other more, and yet he seems to be the top player that seems to play the silly, goofy events far more frequently than any other top player.
Well, it seems like Tiger, too. I mean, he's played in the past in, you know, the Tour Championship and late into the fall, whereas Phil, after the PGA, he's done for the year.
Right, and what I'm saying, you know, Phil plays those desert events that nobody else goes to. You know, Phil plays the international that, you know, no top player's really ever there. That's all I'm talking about. But mainly because I didn't see another chance to bag on Phil in this podcast, so I had to get it in somewhere.
Yeah, he always does.
Nice.
Players are also concerned about how they're going to pay out the FedEx Cup next year. Some players are talking about whether it should be deferred compensation in retirement, etc., or whether they just want to be paid. Give me $10 million. Give me a fake cardboard check for $10 million, and, you know, take my $6 million home after taxes. How do you think? Does this matter? Is this, you know, a case of the rich whining about how they're going to be paid, or what?
Yeah, it's millionaires complaining about how they're going to make more millions at the end of the year. I mean, come on. This is ridiculous, complaining about that.
I think they should pay it to me. I'll hold on to it for 30 years.
There you go.
And if they still need it in 30 years, I'll gladly give it to them.
You're so kind. That's just the way Eric is.
Yeah.
Wow. Very benevolent.
Yeah, I'll even give them half the interest I earn off of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is just one of those issues that's not really an issue. I mean, it's okay, right. So it's going to be paid out somehow, but great.
Okay, good. Let's make it a non-issue and move on then. Jeff, this is your story here, for obvious reasons.
Oh, yeah, hole-in-ones. Yeah, I forgot about that. Well, apparently a golfer made a hole-in-one last month at a charity tournament in Kerrville, and this is Texas. Won $50,000.
Wait, is that in the South?
Yes, it is, but I don't have a Southern drawl.
Okay.
Yeah, and he wins $50,000 being sued by a teammate over how the money should be spent. This is ludicrous.
The teammate invited him to play in this scramble or in this tournament and thinks that because he was invited to play, he should get half of the $50,000, basically.
Mm-hmm,
or,
yeah,
he wants to split the prize with the Kerrville Professional Firefighters Association, which is the group that organized the event.
This is just completely ludicrous. I mean, pass the guy another doobie, okay?
Yeah, a judge is keeping Martin from spending the check, which he hasn't yet received. Yeah, okay.
Ludicrous.
Retarded. But, you know, maybe with the $50,000 he'd buy some drinks.
I kind of don't think that their friendship is like it was before the hole-in-one.
No, probably not. The commissioner of the European Tour, the executive director they have over there, sat down with the Omega people who host the tournament on the European Tour that invited Michelle Wie to play last year. Basically released a statement that said, "I had lunch with the president of Omega at Wentworth recently, and we both agreed we will do what is in the best interest of everybody concerned, and that includes Michelle Wie. My own personal view is that a 16-year-old, playing on a course like that, which the top professionals tell me you need to have length and a very powerful short game, it isn't really in her best interest. I think he's listened to my opinion. I felt it was the right place to try the initiative, and all our players completely backed the invitation, but they actually share a concern for her that she should not be put through that torture again." Is he overstepping his bounds and kind of leaning on a sponsor of his tour, or just speaking the truth?
Yeah, I think he's just speaking the truth. I mean, good for him. Michelle Wie's taken, in my mind, a bit of a media hit this year simply because she's missed so many cuts and hasn't had success. And that's what we want to see from a young golfer, is having success in the arena that they are most qualified for, which is most often the amateur and then those special sponsors exemptions that in keeping with their gender. So,
right. Alan?
Yeah, I don't think I think he made a lot of good points. It's just... You just wonder, being Omega being the sponsor, they're going to sit there and say, "Well, that's great, but we sold that many thousands of more tickets because Michelle Wie was here no matter how bad she played."
Right, or that many hundred more watches. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out what a powerful short game is.
To get out of the rough, maybe? I don't know.
I don't know. A powerful short game. Yeah, I hit that putt 4 feet past the hole.
Power. Awesome. Raw power.
Awesome, man. See that bang off the cup there? That was a great tap-in. Steve Elling has written an article here called, oddly enough, "Champs Tour to Open Doors." Really makes no sense to me. And he starts off by saying it sounds like a complete oxymoron. And it is, because the Champions Tour, from what you and I can tell, Jeff, is closing the doors. He seems to think that these Monday qualifiers are going to be what open doors to people, despite the fact that they're basically shutting out anyone from qualifying via Q School. He thinks that because some local guys might play in some of these Monday qualifiers, that'll lead to some more interesting stories.
Yeah, well, the issue here is that he's painting the glass half full because more local guys are going to have the opportunity to play their way in, but it's really what it's doing is preventing guys who in the past had a great opportunity to play in the Champions Tour by going through Q School, and that is now going to be held back.
Right, it's basically now, you know, if you aren't on the PGA Tour for a couple of years before you turn 50, you have very, very little chance of getting on the Champions Tour, whereas before, you just had to finish in the top 10 or 15 or 20 or whatever it was at Q School, and then you had a Champions Tour card. Now you have to, even if you manage to do that, you still have to play well enough each week to Monday qualify.
Yeah, well, he quotes someone here, a fellow by the name of Adcock. Apparently he spent about $75,000 traveling around to qualify in Monday qualifiers. 10 times he played his way on that week. But now there's going to be 7 more spots up for grabs. So apparently, maybe that, you know, in his mind, he's thinking, oh, great, you know, they're handing me more spots for me to qualify now. He's going to have to spend that money to. But again, those opportunities are open because other opportunities are now closed, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, well, I'm so pissed. Screw the Champions Tour. See if I watch them next year. In our last topic this week, there's a section of this article we'll link to that talks about the possibility of adding more or awarding more nationwide players PGA Tour cards in the future. They award 20 now. They may award 25. Of course, Q School cards would go down from 30 to 25, limiting a few more spots from Q School. This is similar to the Champions Tour way, except A, you still get 25 if you go through Q School, and B, unlike the Champions Tour, the Nationwide Tour is kind of like a minor league for the PGA Tour, whereas the Champions Tour has no real minor league that, you know, finish in the top 20 and you get in. So, you know, good move here. Would you want to see Nationwide Tour spots move from 20 to 25, even at the cost of Q School spots, Alan?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it gives these guys, it gives more opportunity for those guys on the better half of the Nationwide Tour to actually graduate and get up to the big league, so to speak. I think it's a great move.
Jeff, if you were commissioner of the PGA Tour or in charge of all this, where would you set the numbers for both Q School, you know, top money list on the PGA Tour to keep your card, and Nationwide Tour? Where would you set the numbers?
Well, I'm not sure if I know where I'd set the numbers, but I think this reflects very well how Nationwide guys have fared. It's pretty much a proven fact that Nationwide players end up playing longer on the PGA Tour. Not so many Q School guys really get in there and have success. I think the difference being that in the Nationwide Tour, you have a chance to prove yourself. There's a long season. You're in there battling it out week in and week out. So I think it's a positive thing. There's in no way would I take away a tremendous amount of Q school spots, but I think increasing the Nationwide opportunity there is a positive one.
Yeah, if I were in charge, I think I might do something along the lines of PGA Tour money list. You award 70 or 125 spots right now. I might cut that number down to 75. I might bump the Nationwide Tour up to 40 spots, top 40 on the money list, or top 35 or so, and give a few more to the Q School people as well. Because I think, you know, those guys that are in the 100 to 125 range are earning a comfortable living, and yet never even sniffing a lead throughout the year. I think it's way too comfortable. It's gotten into a situation where there's so much money out there that you can have a great PGA Tour career and never win a darn thing. I mean, Brett Quigley is floating on that boat right now. He's, you know, what's he doing? He's finishing a couple top tens and, you know, never really threatening the lead too often except on Friday, and goes to the Tour Championship this year. So, I don't know. We'll probably talk a little bit more about that in our season closing show next week, but do you guys have anything else to add this week?
Nothing to add. It's been a good week.
Well, that'll do it for the PGA Tour this year. We still have the LPGA ADT Championship with an interesting playoff structure coming up, so we'll certainly be tuned in to watch that. And for Alan Olson and Jeff Smith, this is Eric Barzeski saying, hasta la vista, baby.
Okay, we'll see you next time.